Smells good.
Thanks. I picked up a Tuscan herb marinated tenderloin from Hatfield at Schnucks on my way home.
Huh, Hatfield?
They're new in town and are all about raising pork right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They put a pledge to it right on the packages of all the varieties of marinated pork tenderloins, loin fillets, and ribs they offer.
Oh, that's great. But there's a problem.
What?
It's not on the table yet.
Oh. Find better pork for your family at your local Schnucks.
Let JJS Flooring show you how they can save you money. Part of JJS Flooring's secret is not only that they have been in business for over 30 years, but they deal directly with manufacturers to get you the best prices. And their service is second to none. JJS Flooring now carries supplies for installers and do-it-yourselfers. You can get tools, padding, adhesives, and more. Shop the city and save at JJS Flooring. Call them today at 314-772-3996. Their service will floor you.
Biggie's Restaurant and Bar has been a staple of the community for over 27 years. At Biggie's, they pride themselves on service and great food. They make all of their dressings, marinades, and pasta sauces in-house. Try Biggie's famous fried chicken every Thursday or Sunday. Biggie's has what you are looking for this Lenten season. Come out every Friday during Lent for Jack Salmon and Stuffed Flounder. Located at 3332 Watson Road, check them out online at biggiesrestaurant.com.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law?
All right, now you smart people need to jump on the phone and get in here before the lines are tired up, because it's time to check in with Scott Sherman, attorney at law. He will answer at no charge your legal questions, and every Thursday for over 3 years.
You said call before the lines are tired up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by. We will return to our regularly scheduled program momentarily. Please stay tuned.
Off the air, Dan just apologized to me for mishearing what something he thought I said that I didn't say. I accept your apology, Dan.
Oh, okay.
Now we move on. So here's the deal. Scott Sherman is an attorney, and he's brought to you by Dr. Steve Staley. That's important. When we wrap up here, I'll tell you all about Dr. Staley. He's a sports medicine physician, and he specializes in hard-to-treat areas. We'll talk about him before we get out of here. Dr. Steve Staley. All his information is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/AM and the PM. So here's how this works. I'm going to give these numbers. The really smart people will call and get some good, solid legal advice about anything, anything that involves something legal or potentially illegal or legal. Here we go, 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Now, I see, let me do that again, I did it too fast, 314-821-0590. Lines are already lighting up. Folks, when you hear a caller finish with Scott, that means a line just opened, so you jump in and you start calling. Again, Scott Sherman brought to you by Dr. Steve Staley. Let's say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Frank.
How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. I was at Dr. Staley's office a couple hours ago.
Yeah, are you okay?
I'm fine. I was making an appointment for my mom. She's got a little carpal tunnel kind of thing going on, and I had some business over there, so I made an appointment for her. She's going to go there Monday.
Yeah, I may have to see him, too, this spring, because I have a right knee issue, and like to get his take on that. As long as we're talking about him, his website is drstevestaley.com. I know, you can't write that down, and you don't know how to spell it. You don't have to. It's on our Facebook page. But he's shoulders and knees, that's his specialty, but he does other hard-to-treat areas. He's a big promoter of PRP, platelet-rich plasma. Look that up. It's cutting-edge stuff. And if you're in the military, if you're active military, you get 50% off the PRP treatments from Dr. Staley. 314-909-1666. Lines are loaded. Would you like to start?
I'm ready.
Let's go. I got a feeling it's going to be a good day. Let's start with Jack. Jack, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott.
Hello, Jack.
I've been trying to get a hold of, we've kind of been playing phone tag all week long. What I got is, my wife died probably six weeks ago now. She, went to the hospital on a Tuesday. That next Wednesday, we actually had a memorial. She got a MRSA infection. But the thing is, now I'm getting these doctor bills. I don't know. I've been told different things. Don't pay them until, and see about getting assistance. Some people told me that it's not in your name, you're not liable. I'm not trying to cheat anybody out of anything. I just got to find out what to do. I don't even know where our checkbooks are. I've been married 32 years and haven't written a check in 31.
Frank,
I don't know what to do.
First of all, Jack, I'm really sorry to hear about your wife. How old was your wife?
59.
Way too young. Way too young. And you just described to me my dad's situation. My dad never wrote a check. He had no idea about any. My mom did all of that because she was a very controlling person. And I'm not saying your wife is controlling. I'm just saying in my case, she was. So when she died, he didn't have a clue about how to pay a bill, what to look for in the mail, nothing. So I really feel bad for you, and I'm really sorry. 59 is way too young now for anybody to go away. I'm not going to take a run at legally any of this billing stuff. I'll just let Scott take it.
Jack, I also join Frank in my condolences about your wife. And let's use this opportunity as just sort of a touch base point for a couple of things as a general proposition. Then tomorrow morning, you and I will talk about 9 a.m. Is that cool?
That's great.
All right, here's what I want you to know. It is true that medical bills that are not in your name but are in the name of a spouse can be the spouse's responsibility under a doctrine that they call the doctrine of necessities, meaning that medical bills are often considered necessities, and even though it wasn't your medical care, it can be in some way your responsibility. But that's not the end of the game, so it's not a yes or no. There's so many things here. There's health insurance questions. There's estate questions. There's charity questions. But then there's the question that I want to delve in deeper a little bit with you tomorrow, but a two-track one. Well, three-track one. One, this bill or the set of medical bills. Two, your wife's estate. And I know it's a terrible thing to think about, but how that is going to be processed. And then third, the possibility that the MRSA that she contracted may have been the fault of the hospital. I'm not saying it is, but it's definitely something that needs to be looked at. And
I jump in and ask on behalf of a lot of people, what is MRSA?
Oh, MRSA, M-S-R-A. It's basically an infection similar to a staph infection. Is that right, Jack? You're understanding it?
Yes, exactly right.
It's got a long name that nurses and doctors will go, that guy's an idiot because he doesn't know what it is. But it is a terrible bacterial infection that you usually get from someone or something. And Tim knows.
My dad had it, actually, in the hospital. A good friend of mine who's a wrestler had a wrestling injury, and it can literally deteriorate and eat away your flesh and skin permanently.
It is a horrible thing. Now, this is not to pin it on whatever medical facility this is, but I want people to know this. Medical professional facilities have some of the greatest, most dedicated, most brilliant people in the world, and they are some of the most filthiest, most disgusting places on earth. You think a dirty kitchen or a bathroom at a roadside gas station is bad? Hospitals are filthy, and it's not necessarily the fault of the people that are supposed to clean it up. It's the fault of the hospital facilities. If you go into a hospital and you don't get some kind of infection, that's probably the exception and not the rule, especially if you have a compromised immune system. So, that doesn't mean in this particular case Jack's wife passed away because of the hospital's filthy facilities, but that is another track to look at, and that is another thing I want him to allow me to have my people look at. So, with respect to the medical bill, there is a thing called the doctrine of necessities that does hold the spouse responsible for the bill, medical bills for their other spouse. And then there is the possibility of getting that resolved. And then there are issues about an estate and how that has to be adjudicated. And then there's this, how did she get sick in the first place? I'd like to tackle all of those things starting tomorrow.
That'd be great.
You got it.
I appreciate that. I've been like, I called Saturday, and I do for a living, I'm just not always near a phone. But anyway,
that's cool,
stop.
Man.
Anyway.
Look, you don't have to apologize for anything.
Jack, how long were you married?
32 years.
Do you have kids?
No.
Okay. Did she have siblings, or you have siblings?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, man, you'll talk to Scott tomorrow, but again, I have a very good friend who just lost his wife last year, and
it happened so fast. I mean, like I said, Tuesday we went to the urgent care. Tuesday night we went to the hospital. Next Wednesday we're having a memorial because she died Sunday.
Unbelievable. I've made a lot of jokes about my wife over the years and had a lot of fun at her expense, not in a horrible way. But I will tell you, if she left, if she died, I don't know what I would do.
I would be
lost, completely lost. And I have kids for support. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, so, it's a little different.
It's going to be rough, but you'll get through it. People get through things they don't think they can get through, and in most cases, it just takes time. How old are you?
I turned 60 in November, last November.
Well, you probably still have a lot of good years ahead of you, and I hope they are good. Thank you, Jack, for calling and listening.
Well, thank you. I'm AM and PM.
Thank you.
I've been listening to Wave 4 Kicks with you guys.
Oh man, thank you. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. I feel bad for that guy. 59 years old. Holy cow.
It's terrible. And, you know, he feels...
Especially when it's that quick. You know what? I don't know which is worse. You don't want somebody languishing and sick in bed for 2 years. You don't want that. But at the same time, man, you also don't want gone. Just boom, gone. No. But that happens with a bad car wreck, or it happens with a heart attack. It's just instant. Maybe that's the best. That may be the best way. It probably is. You know, you don't have time to get things in order, really say goodbye, but at the same time, you don't have to be sick and in bed and treatments and all that stuff either. Let's go to James. James, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Scott Sherman. How's it going, gang?
Going great, James.
Going terrific.
All right, I'm AM and the PM.
A quick reminder, if you don't mind, James, people, Jack is gone, so his line is open, 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. What do you got, James?
All right, so I got an interesting question. I don't know if Scott will be able to help me or not, but it kind of involves municipal code enforcement. So I've had problems with a particular inspector several years in the past, whatever, but... So here's the deal. So I cut my grandmother and my uncle's grass, and for free. It's just family. I just help them out. But I happen to own a commercial-style mower. And so this code enforcement guy comes by every year. He sees my truck and trailer, and he sees me out there on this mower. He stops me, and he says, well, do you have a contractor's license? And that's what they require here in the city if you're a contractor. But I'm not a contractor, and I try to explain to this guy every time that I'm just helping family. I have 2 yards that are family members that I cut, and that's it. They don't pay me. I don't, you know, I'm not insured. I don't have a contractor. I don't have a business card or nothing. So what recourse do I have against this guy?
All right. My reaction to this is I don't think you need any recourse. I think this guy's way out of line, and
exactly.
I don't think he has any business. Yeah, well, I think you ignore this guy because there's nothing he can do. There's no evidence of money changing hands, of you actually doing business as a business. The type of equipment you use should be irrelevant. Now, Scott may have a different response to this, but to me, it doesn't matter what kind of equipment you use. They're your relatives. You're cutting their grass, whether you cut it with scissors or a commercial. Scott, what do you think?
I'm with you guys. If you went over there to cut their hair and you happen to be a hairstylist and you used one of those electric clippers in your
great
own
scissors, example.
What is
great
the
example.
Difference? If that is absolutely, I'd like to see what municipal code they actually have.
And I got another good example. What if you were a painter, house painter? My dad used to be a house painter, and I remember as a little kid, he'd paint my aunt's house, he'd paint my grandmother's house. He didn't charge them. He was, by trade, a painter. But in this, it's exactly what you're talking about.
Or a chef that's doing a backyard barbecue.
This is a guy who's a troublemaker. This guy's an SH disturber. He's a troublemaker.
Yeah. I do have a couple questions for James. One is, in this municipality, this town, do you live there also in addition? Okay. I would talk to the city manager, if not the mayor, and I'd say, here's the deal. Everybody's got a boss. And I am the taxpayer, and I'm not going to say I pay his salary, but I live in this community. My mom and my uncle, they live in this community. What is wrong with Joe Blow? What is he talking about? And I'd like to see which code he's talking about. And if he has a problem and he thinks I violated the code, he should write me up. And if not, he should leave me alone. So either my lawyer can take this to court and we can have a trial, and maybe bring the news media there, or leave me alone. Stop harassing the employees.
How many times has he approached you about this?
Twice in years past. And one time I did go get this contractor's permit for $50. And here's the thing. So he's hassling me. He tells me no. Like I said, look, let me finish cutting this yard, and I'll go down to City Hall, and I'll get this straightened out. And he goes, no, you got to stop what you're doing right now. And I thought, are you kidding me? Like, it's 15 minutes to load up my equipment and then drive down there.
Here's my first piece of advice. Stop doing what this guy tells you to do. If he goes, you need to stop right now, I'd say, no, you need to stop right now.
No, you need to say, you need to get a court order to stop me from cutting my mom's grass. Right. If you don't
if you don't leave me alone and you do this again, I'm going to get a restraining order against you because you're starting to make me uncomfortable.
That's right. I don't know what your problem is, but get your code book out and either write me up for whatever it is, municipal code violation there is, and give me notice so I can go to court and defend myself, or leave me alone. And by the way, get off my mother's property. You're creeping her out.
Yeah.
We'll have Elliot Davis down here by Sunday.
She's afraid of you, and I'm afraid of you. We're going to get a restraining order against you because we think you're dangerous.
This is the best Elliot Davis one of all time because it's so incredibly obnoxious and stupid on behalf of this code enforcement guy that it would be right up Elliot's alley.
Yeah. Well, and I've dealt with him before, like in home inspections, because I've remodeled my house and had to pull permits for it. And he's a stickler. He's everything to the T, you know. And I've told him on that kind of stuff, I said, well, that's not a rule I'm aware of. You bring me the code, and I'll go ahead and get it fixed if that's what I need to do, you know. But, like, on this one, you know, how do I prove my innocence, obviously?
I would say you show me the code. In the meantime, the codes are all online. There's a pretty cool website called municode.com, I think, and you can, by city, take a look at those codes. If you can't find anything that sounds like this, I'd make him do it. But I would talk to the city manager about this. That's their job. And I hope this is one of those towns that goes away when they do the together.
Right.
Then it would be funny. Well,
the one time I did pay for it, it kind of pissed me off because I thought I was going to go down to the city hall. I had a relative that worked down there. I thought I'd go down there and talk to them and say, hey, look, you know who I'm grass I'm cutting. And they'd say, oh, it's no big deal. Just go on about your business.
I was trying to get him
to leave me alone. And I get down there, and they're like, oh, no, you got to have one. I'm like, are you kidding me?
James, is it about the equipment you have or about you as your occupation?
No, it's about – so any general contractor has to have a general contractor's license. There's hundreds of guys running around cutting grass around town that probably don't simply because they haven't gotten caught kind of thing. But, yeah, he targets me because he sees the big commercial mower in my trailer, and he thinks, oh, this guy is clearly doing this for a living, you know.
Right.
And,
Who cares what he thinks? Next time he comes again, call the police. Right in front of him. Get your phone and call the police.
Who's his boss, right?
His boss is the mayor or the city manager. That's who they're in charge of. And, you know, there have been towns that these code enforcement people have gone completely nuts. And, you know, the corruption of Pine Lawn is one of them. But this probably isn't corruption. This is just power. This is just an abuse of power. I'm going to tell the name of the town that I used to have an office in, and I don't anymore. And we used to have at the other station, Maryland Heights. And I'm saying it on purpose. The one of the people that's the building code enforcement people is one of the worst human beings I've ever met in my entire life. We spent a ton of money, and Frank knows that, my buddy Jimmy, we went and got like a 1,000-square-foot office space, and we spent like $5,000 tricking this thing out. And this guy walked in, and he wrote us up for not having batteries in the exit sign. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, it's not even my building. What are you talking about? And I had to go to City Hall and get that cleared up. And I told the city manager person, I said, I'm going to tell you this right now. I got a one-year lease. In 366 days, I'm leaving, and I'm never coming back because of your idiot. And I did, and I've never been back. And that same guy got run out of the Westport Plaza by one of the big construction firms. He was trying to get him to tear up their floor that they had spent like $500,000 on, and they threw him out on his butt. So these people are not all bad, but sometimes they are bad, and they need...
And they get power hungry.
That's
they,
right.
They, you know, they get full of themselves.
Chicken manure is what this is.
Yeah.
So get a 12-year-old kid to have the push mower and tell him that's your subcontractor, and he doesn't need a license.
Hey, how big is your mom's lawn that you're cutting?
Well, my grandmother's is pretty small. It's just an in-town yard, but my uncle's it's probably a half acre or at least a quarter acre for sure. It's a good size in-town yard.
Okay, just curious. All right. I wouldn't worry about this. This guy's a loser. I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
City manager.
Yeah, there's been rumors before that he's actually stopped like a kid going down the street pushing a lawnmower carrying a weed eater kind of thing and tried to get them to go down and get a... I think they even had something. Somebody wrote a photo in the paper about it years ago.
I wish they had I'd like to see that on YouTube. That would be absolutely the most viral thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was my thought. You know, as soon as he approaches, I'm going to get my phone out and start recording.
Absolutely do that. Yeah. No, do that. And say to him, say, hey, you're going to really enjoy seeing yourself on YouTube tonight looking like an idiot.
Get away from me, pervert.
And Facebook and every other... social media outlet.
Yeah.
See, I'm not going anywhere with you, creep.
The problem with a guy like this is nobody challenges these people. You know, they're so obnoxious, and they exude this "I've got power," and people buckle under to that. Somebody needs to challenge him, call him out, and make them look like what they are, losers and idiots. So, good luck, James. We got to run. Thank you for calling.
Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
I'm guessing that Marv, this is Marv from Florissant. We'll find out. Marv, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Frank. Before I get to Scott, just a little quick aside. You talked about your geometry teacher being such a great guy, and so was mine at Hazelwood High School back in 1959. But you said he also was a great Spanish teacher, and because he was from Brazil, which is really cool. But I hasten to point out that they speak Portuguese in Brazil. Maybe you were learning Portuguese and didn't know it.
Portuguese is actually, and Italian and Spanish are all very similar, and that's what I think gave him the great ability to be so fluent in Spanish.
They're all Romance languages, I know, but it's just funny. You said Spanish, and he's from Portugal. Well, anyway. Don't do that to me. No, damn it. Scott.
Sir.
Hey, on this this movie star, celebrities, bribing officials, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
I can understand where public schools and institutions those people are employees. They're government employees, right? They're considered government employees, I guess you would say. So if you were to bribe or do anything untoward with one of them, that gets into a certain realm of like I say, bribing an official, you know, government person like a cop or a judge. However, when it comes to private universities and institutions, that becomes more of a civil thing, don't you? Why are there criminals? Hell, I went to two different private universities in the course of my life, and everybody knows about legacies and bequeathals and donations, and this happens all the time. People with money, people with influence, they get their kids in. It's just a fact of life. So what are they really charged with in a private institution which has no government oversight?
Fraud and wire fraud and mail fraud. Not because
Fraud to who? Who's being defrauded?
I didn't know it was a deposition. I thought it was a question.
No, I just don't understand it. Who's the victim here?
Well, the people that didn't have a fair shot at getting in. Now, I agree with you that if USC or Yale says, look, here we have two tiers of people that get in. The people that take the ACT and the SAT and grade point averages, and then we have a bunch of rich people because the Kennedys go to Harvard and the Bushes go to Yale, and we really don't, you know, we have a two-tier system and that's the way it is. That's one thing. But when they do something that they wouldn't normally or otherwise do but for the payment, and they use the banking system, and they use email, and they use wire transfers and all of that to commit a crime. And the crime, you're going, well, what's the crime? The crime is that they are lying to the people that are playing it straight by making it seem as though there's only one system. Now, you're like, well, that's a little esoteric. It's a bribe. Now, if you go to a private business and you walk in and you hand the maitre d' $25, is that a bribe? Of course it's a bribe. But everybody that walks into a restaurant knows that there is this second-tier operation where if you grease the guy, you might get in. I don't see the FBI is going to crack down on that. But in this particular instance, especially when some of the acts are different, you had some people paying to have the SAT scores changed or other people to take them. So you do have some fraud in the payment. I do not disagree with you that if it is a common fact that if you give a bunch of money to Harvard, you got a better chance of getting in there. That in a private school setting should not be a crime. But when what these people were doing was paying off the admissions people to fraudulently have the appearance of one tier but actually have two tiers. Now, you're going to say, I don't believe that, and that's why if they go to trial, they might be acquitted. But to the question of what have they done wrong, the schools have set up a system that looks like it's fair and equal, and it's absolutely not if you've got enough dough to bribe people.
There's also a money laundering charge here now with this Lori Loughlin.
Yes.
I don't exactly know why or what happened.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's not illegal money. It's
appeared money. It appeared to be for some sort of honorarium or appeared to be for some sort of charity, and really what it went to do was to grease this front man and officials at USC.
So there's one other thing we haven't mentioned here that I just read about yesterday, and that is that some of these people have taken these bribes as deductions on their taxes. You can't do that. You cannot do that. Okay,
right.
That is a federal fraud. That's a felony. So
that makes sense.
There are multiple layers to what these people have done.
It sounds like in the case of the private institutions, it sounds like a quasi attempt to legislate morality. I mean, it goes on. The only problem these people have is they got caught. Again, this is different from public institutions. But in the private case, it's gone on for 100 years, and it goes on every day. And, yeah, maybe it's not a nice way to play, but that's the fact of life. And like I say, somebody's trying to legislate morality. It's almost to the degree of hate crimes, which are nonsensical anyway. I mean, we won't get into that. But, okay, I guess I'll just have to live with it. Scott, I think you agree, though. You agree that this isn't...
I agree that
kind of a crime, if it's even a crime.
I agree with this. I agree that over the years, there are Ivy League institutions and other private schools, including Stanford, USC, and some of these others, that have had two or three different tiers of admission policy.
Mm-hmm.
One for regular folks, one for rich folks, and the other for athletes or artists or other people that they have the non-traditional sort of skill set that they want on their basketball team or they want in their art school. In this particular instance, what these folks were doing was the school was holding itself out as equal and fair, creating its own contract or its own set of policies, and then taking money under the table to sneak people in fraudulently.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I said.
Well, I don't want to take up a bunch of time here, but it does raise an interesting question, and To me, it just doesn't sound right. Again, these are civil matters as far as I'm concerned. That should be handled in a civil courts. I just don't see a criminal action here. But thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And we'll be listening. Bye now.
Hi, Marv. Thank you, Marv.
Real quick, the criminal act is that fraud occurred in getting a student into the school, but the means by which the fraud occurred was that money laundering occurred. And it takes two to launder money. There has to be a giver and a receiver, and they're both guilty of money laundering.
When a university lets little Jimmy Bush in because his daddy gave $10 million to the school, there's no fraud there. That's their prerogative. They can do that.
Right.
And by the way, quite frankly, if it weren't for the donations of some of these people, some of these schools wouldn't have the facilities they have, the library they have, the athletic department they have. But I kind of get that because that actually helps everybody, that big fat contribution to the school.
There was a conspiracy, though. There was a conspiracy to create false athleticism of these students.
And that's it. But I think what Frank and I are saying is probably what you're saying, which is this. If USC or Yale or Harvard were upfront about it and just said, look, we have certain criteria for certain levels of people. And as much as you may not like it, athletes that don't get high SAT scores come in because they're athletes. And rich people who don't have SAT scores come in because we want a new gymnasium. And that's the way it is. And if you don't like it, go to UCLA or something like that.
Here's maybe another example. I had a very wealthy friend who had cancer. And he wrote a big fat check to a hospital, to a research department of a hospital, so that he get to the front of a line on some experimental research stuff. Probably ahead in the line of other people who didn't have money. I don't have a problem with that, and I'll tell you why. That money that he gave may save the lives of some of the people behind him in line, if that makes sense. And it's kind of the same thing. He cheated, sort of, but he helped that hospital financially in ways that will benefit other people. Maybe that's a good example.
It's a very good example, except in the case of Lori Loughlin in this that Huffman's kids, they were fraudulently creating resumes to shoehorn them in to the criteria that USC was using as their student athlete or their student criteria. They were lying about the credentials and cheating on the SAT score.
See, my comparison to that medically would be if my buddy had faked having cancer.
Right.
He pretend to have cancer to get put in the best part of the hospital.
Or how about this? Let's say that program was only available for people that were stage 1 through 3, and he was stage 4, and they snuck him in anyway just because they wanted the money. Would that be fraudulent? Absolutely it would, because he's lying about his medical. In the end, does it morally benefit the medical community for that money to be donated? It does. Lori Loughlin's stupid daughters do not benefit anyone by going to USC except Lori Loughlin and her stupid daughters. They're not helping anyone, and they're stealing a position from someone else. I just say, look, just like Harvard, if your name is Kennedy, you're getting into Harvard. Just be upfront about it. If they didn't put the fake credentials out there, or if they didn't violate their own sort of standards by creating the false resume, it wouldn't have been fraud. It would have been bribery, but I think, like Marv was saying, it would have been legal bribery because they're a private institution.
All right, let's get to our next call. We have a couple lines open, by the way, folks. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Dan, thank you for being patient and holding. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi. Frank, we kind of met through the years. We met when we were flying helicopters. We met when we were down at a handgun store in the Ozarks. And wow. I did a little work on a station you were at before. So I've been a long, long time fan of yours and follower. On the other hand... I am a physician, and listening to that poor gentleman who called in first, I had to call with a rebuttal because I felt there was gross misrepresentation of hospitals when the statement was used that it's more the majority of patients that leave with an infection that don't. The national infection rates are well below 3%, And I think to use that situation to inflame and use the media of radio to your own advantage to bring that case in does not leave much credibility to this situation. And therefore, I will not negate the show any longer, but during these segments, with that type of information being given out, I can no longer recommend listening during those segments, because that information was not only wrong, it was inflammatory, and use a poor person's demise to your own advantage, which I think is unethical.
Well, I mean, first of all, there's no case unless there's a case. The woman had MRSA and died. So, I mean, I don't know what you're arguing about that for. Second of all, no one knows how she passed away other than from MRSA.
Right.
So I don't know how you can say she didn't pass away because she didn't contract. What did I say? She got it from – I didn't say she got it from the hospital. I mean, look, doctor or whatever you are, I didn't say she got it from any medical facility.
No, did you not say...
No, did I say that or not? Because you came on here...
You said it is more the exception than the rule that you go into a hospital and don't leave with an infection. That's what you said. Then you started to describe MRSA, which, without knowing the pathology and all the things that happened to this lady, saying that, well, we need to explore why all these things happened.
Why not?
I think it's inflammatory. It's inflammatory.
Why wouldn't
it leaves the public with poor information? Right. I think it leaves them with a partial story. Instead of saying, you know, there are many situations that MRSA occurs independent of any medical care.
Yeah, I think I said that, dude.
Did I not say that?
I mean, Dan, here's the good news. You were getting the opportunity to speak for the other side. In other words, there is balance here, and I hope that you won't never listen again or say nobody should listen because of one segment of a segment where you think Scott might have misspoken. We're here to let you set the record straight and tell us what was misstated.
I want the public to know that hospital infections are less than 3%. It's not the majority of patients, which was stated. When you go into hospital, it's more the exception to the rule that you don't leave without an infection. That's incorrect. As far as the lady getting MRSA, sure.
Hold on, wait. So you can get MRSA in a hospital?
You can get it out of the hospital.
Wait, wait. But look, I know you're advocating for the hospital system, but is it possible to get MRSA in a hospital?
It is.
Is it possible that woman got MRSA from the hospital?
Is it possible? In a hospital,
did anyone say she did? I actually said we don't know why. So we just need to assume just because you work in the hospital, we need to assume that a man that just lost his wife from MRSA should forget about the possibility that she contracted it from the hospital. We didn't identify the hospital. We didn't even identify if it was a hospital. So we should forget about it because it might hurt your feelings because you're in the medical profession.
You spoke gravely inaccurately by saying it's more the
you said the rule. Look, you said the hospital rates are 3%.
You'll hear that.
All right, you said the hospital rates were 3%. How many people are admitted to a hospital in the United States? Is that not a significant number?
My dad got MRSA in the hospital when he had knee surgery.
Well, how do you know, Tim, that he did?
Because the doctors told him that.
Okay, so, you know, I think maybe using some sort of, you know, attempt to sort of, you know, highlight.
Did you not say that it was the exception to the rule that you would leave with an infection than without?
Well, I have to go back and check it.
You said it very clearly.
But you also said that we should not go because this poor man lost his wife and look into it, that was unethical. Actually, it's unethical not to. Let me have a second here because I look, Dan, you're a long-time listener, and I don't want to lose you, and I don't want you to leave.
I'm also a surgeon. I'm also a surgeon.
Okay, I don't want you to leave. I don't want you to leave this discussion without being satisfied that what we said was fair. Scott did say that hospitals were great places to catch things, and he did imply that. But here, let me put it this way. When he says maybe it's worth checking out to see if he got it in the hospital, to me is no different than, let's say the guy had been involved in a car wreck and a lady hit him. for somebody to say, we need to check and see if she was drinking, isn't implying that everybody that hits somebody is drinking. It's implying that it's possible that might have been. So that's really where we are. Now, but if he overstated. Friend, go ahead.
And you'll hear that he said, yeah, it was way overstated.
That's possible.
To get infected rather than not. He said that okay. Very clearly.
If in fact,
exception to the rule.
Dan, I'm not saying he didn't say it, and he's not saying he didn't say it. So if he did put it that way, I'm sure Scott will go back and listen to it and be more than happy to apologize next week for overstating it. So yeah, we're not denying that.
Yeah, and whether I said what you said, I said exactly the way you interpreted it or not. The fact is, and I think if you take your 3% number. Thousands of people every year contract some sort of infection.
But that's not more the exception than the rule.
But that doesn't. What I said doesn't make one. 50%. Doesn't make one hospital less or more safe. And I didn't say any hospital in particular, or not to go to a hospital, or that they're not wonderful places.
I think all Dan's trying to say is that if you said it's more the exception than the rule, that implies that you are probably going to get an infection if you go to the hospital.
All right. Well, then
if it was stated that way, it was misstated. And we'll go back and check it, and if that's the case, and I'm not saying it's not the case, we'll be happy to retract it and restate
it. In the hospital I work at, a lot of people listen to this show, and I'm sure I'll probably have a whole bunch of calls when we hang up.
Maybe so. That's great.
Do that,
and I'm sure that there are also a lot of people that go to your hospital and never get an infection. But for the people whose family member does, to be flippant and say, well, this poor man should not have to bear the burden, why wouldn't you want to look into an infection if one of your loved ones did and they were in a medical facility? I think that it would you forget about it because they happened to go to a medical facility? I don't know. I would hate for you to be in that position. I just did.
You need to qualify that statement.
I just did. Maybe it was a bit of hyperbole, but you're talking about thousands, if not tens of thousands of people every year who contract very serious illnesses because of dirty medical facilities.
And that's the other thing. I think you imply that we're working in filth.
No.
Let me tell you, the joint approved hospital is very stiff on the sanitary conditions of hospitals. Now, sure, there are people who wash their hands like they should. There's people that have families in the rooms that come in with infections themselves. There's a lot of reasons. I think that needs to be clarified.
All right. Well, I have a question for you. If 3% is the level of people who go into a medical facility and contract an infection, what was it 10 years ago? Is it better or worse?
About the same.
What was it 20 years ago?
Higher.
Do you folks in the medical industry give all the paperwork people fill out any kind of warning that there's a 3% possibility that they may contract?
Absolutely.
Where is that?
Part of the informed consent.
Very good.
Our consent. It's in our consent. It's in our preoperative note that we discuss it with the patient, what the infection rate is, what the other complications are, bleeding, infection, stroke, paralysis. We go through all those.
Dan, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like for Scott to go back and listen to what he said about hospitals, okay? He's a fair man. And I'm going to tell you right now that if he finds that what he said was extreme and over the top and not representative of hospitals really and was overstated, we will address it next week and fix it. Is that fair?
I appreciate
because I
that.
Think the people who are listening now listen next week. It's a regular audience. I mean, the people who are into this segment are really into it. They will hear the retraction, the restatement, the apology, or whatever next week. I think that's what we should do. We should go back and listen to it again.
I agree, and I should do a little research with the CDC and make sure that my numbers that I come back are accurate. But if 3% is the number, I still think that number is too high, I'd like to see it lower.
Scott, that number may be too high, but what he's saying is to say that it's the exception rather than the rule may be an overstatement. Let's go back and listen to it. I think that's the only fair thing to do. Let's go listen to it again. Is that okay,
Dan?
Thank
you very much, guys.
All right. Yeah, thank you. And thank you for calling us out on something that you thought might have been misstated. I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks, Frank. See you later.
All right, Dan. Bye-bye. All right. Can we? Yeah, no, maybe. One more. We can get one more in here. Let's Ooh, we don't have. Oh, yeah, we do. Josh, I'm sorry, I looked at the wrong screen. Josh, welcome to 590 The Fan. You got about, 3 minutes. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Scott Sherman. I'm AM in the PM.
Hello, Josh.
I think my question is going to be a little more boring than Dan's, but my question is, my mom lives in Illinois. She's a renter. She doesn't have a lot of money, and her apartment complex isn't the greatest, but she's a full-paid renter, and her carpet's in horrible condition, has been for a couple of years, and when she brings it up to the landlord or the apartment complex manager, they say that, well, they can replace it, but they're going to jack her rent up. When they can. Is that an adequate threat when it comes to someone who has a rental agreement?
No. I'll say no. And here's the other thing. Is the carpet visibly filthy? If you took pictures of it, does it look disgusting?
Well, she keeps it clean, but it's just all worn to the threads. So we can't take pictures of it.
So you can show how worn and in need of replacement it is with photos.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. I'll let Scott take this. I'd take some photos and send it to the manager and say, I'm ready to send these to the TV station unless you want to replace this carpet. And to tell them that you've threatened my mom that if you improve her living conditions, she's going to have to pay for that, which you should. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, and the county
health. Or she might get a MRSA infection, I guess.
No, yeah. Wait a minute.
Or the health department. Scott's got a good idea. Jesus. Tell me to go send it to the health department.
The health department. But she shouldn't, if she has a contract, there's nothing in there, I'm sure, that says that if they have to replace the carpet because of no fault of her own, she has to pay for it. That would be an unjust enrichment to them. So,
it'd be different if she destroyed the carpet.
Yeah, if she had destroyed her, she was responsible, or had a dog that was, you know, a big dog that did a number on that, a number one or a number two on that carpet, that would be her fault. But just because she gets the musical chair or runs out of a chair when the music stops doesn't mean she has to pay for their new carpet. That's ridiculous. The difficult part is she can't make them really replace it unless it's sort of dangerous. So I would contact them, tell them she's not paying for that, show in the contract or the lease where it says that, and then I'd contact the health department if they won't do it and say, come look at this. You know, look what my mother has to live in, and see if they can put some pressure on them.
Yeah, they're not going to like that. That health department thing will get their attention.
Well, that's all I want to do, guys, and I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Josh. We're out of time. I want everybody to know that Scott Sherman is sponsored by Dr. Steve Staley. He's a sports medicine physician. His specialty is shoulders and knees and other hard-to-treat injuries. He loves taking care of people with arthritis and doing it with non-surgical treatments, and he's a big promoter of PRP, platelet-rich plasma. You folks who are active military, 50% off from Dr. Staley, 314-909-1666, or his website is on our Facebook page, and that's easy, facebook.com/AM and the PM. Scott, we'll do it again next Thursday.
You bet, Frank.
All right. Scott Sherman, everybody.
Thank you.
I've learned more from this segment than I think I learned in all of high school, except for the plain geometry and Spanish stuff. Scott doesn't cover that. We're headed toward the Playhouse, toward the 5 o'clock hour, and after the news, it'll be usual Playhouse stuff, including a joke at the end that I don't believe I've told for, I don't know, at least a year, maybe a couple of years, by request. So hang on for that. Window World, Trivia Night is May 18th. That is 5 weeks away or something like that. I'm still looking for more money. I will be willing to do all kinds of things to get money for St. Jude Children's Hospital. For example, I just was thinking, the guy paid yesterday $200 to hear a particular joke. You want to give me $5,000, I'll come to your house and tell jokes for 2 hours, okay? I'm just throwing things out there. Years ago, I got $3,000 from a couple to go have dinner at their house. My wife and I went to their house for dinner, and it got $3,000 for charity. So I'm open to suggestions and ideas. It is May 18th. I'd like to get it all wrapped up about a week or so before that, if we could. In the meantime, please remember who it is raising this money, and who it is that sells the number one replacement window in the United States. It's Window World. 314-993-1800. They'll come out and do a free in-home estimate for you. No charge. And you're going to like what you find out about this tremendous product and great company when you go to this website, windowworldstlouis.com. Stay where you are. News, and then the Playhouse, and then Bill Cleveland, and then Mike Evans. Bill's actually part of the Playhouse. See? Chock full the next hour. It's 5 o'clock at 590, The Fan.
This is Tim McKernan. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS, Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. President Trump says he absolutely agrees with Attorney General Bill Barr that the government spied on his campaign in 2016. During a White House photo op today, Trump said many people understand the situation. During a Senate hearing yesterday, Barr expanded on his spying remark to say unauthorized surveillance took place. L.A. federal prosecutors say celebrity lawyer Michael Avenatti stole millions from his clients and is being charged in a 36-count federal indictment. U.S. Attorney in Los Angeles Nick Hanna went over some of the details of the new indictment, including defrauding a paraplegic client.